I'm Ellen Rogan. I am an author, a speaker, a financial advisor, and an abundance activist. And today we're talking about making success and prosperity a habit. You're listening to the Brand Journalism Advantage Podcast.
Episode 335.
Studies on philanthropy have shown that people that are more generous actually make more money.
The Brand Journalism Advantage, the podcast that teaches the power of storytelling to increase business by attracting, engaging, and influencing consumers. Now, it's time to think like a journalist with your host, brand journalist Phoebe Chongchua.
Hello, brand journalism community. I'm Phoebe Chongchua. Thanks for tuning in to the Brand Journalism Advantage podcast. Here we go with the inside scoop. On today's show, Ellen Rogan. Ellen is chock full of left brain credentials. From MBA, CPA, and certified financial planner. Ellen also walks on the right side, though, balancing values, big picture ideas, meditation, and humor with all of her personal training. She is as comfortable talking about the power of compound interest as she is talking about the power of belief. Welcome to the show, Ellen. How are you?
I am great, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is an important one because you refer to yourself as what?
An abundance activist.
I love that. Ellen is also the founder and president of a wealth management firm, and that's near Chicago. And you really combine all of this, right? You know, as you say, the left brain with the right brain. And you don't often find that, at least I haven't, in financial planners.
So what I learned when I was just starting my practice and growing it in the early years is that what made people successful wasn't all the typical things that you would think it would be. It wasn't just being a great budgeter or a savvy investor. A lot of it had to do with their mindset and what they thought about money and what their values are and how they approach their whole financial situation. And I really became fascinated with this. And what I've come to know over many years of working with individuals and speaking in front of groups is that the beauty happens is when you marry the right brain, more creative, intuitive, visualizing values side of things with the left brain analytics. You know, I like to think that if you had somebody who has tons of money in the world and was great at managing it, but they came home and kicked their dog and fought with their partner every night, like that's not what we would want to have happen.
So true.
Yeah. And then the other side is if you're sitting on your meditation pillow, chanting Om, waiting for the universe to provide and never actually taking action in the real world, that doesn't work either.
Mm-hmm.
So combining these two is truly where the magic happens.
Mm. Well, we are going to explore that magic brand journalism community as we make our way through the tips of make success and prosperity a habit, and that will lead to that abundance. And Ellen's going to unpack that in our top tip section. But first, let's talk about your icebreaker. And I absolutely love this because I was a Girl Scout leader for many years for my daughter, who's now 21 years old at the time of this recording. So Ellen says that you've sold the most Girl Scout cookies a long time ago, I'm assuming, for your troop, and that earned your very first sales award?
Yeah. So when I think about my first success in sales, that was really it, selling the most boxes of Girl Scout cookies in my troop. And I became a really good delegator even early in that career, enlisting my father to go to his office and help with that goal. So I'm quite proud of it and still have this certificate that I got. And it was more than a couple years ago.
And, you know, this has led to your other icebreaker that you mentioned. Tell us about your volunteer work. Your success has allowed you to do some volunteer work.
Yes. So I have taken volunteer vacations really all over the world with our family. And we've been to Ghana, we've been to Costa Rica, we've been to Peru, and it's been so amazing in terms of an experience to really see how giving really brings things back. So as a mom, I was doing this to give our kids an experience of seeing how money doesn't necessarily make you happy. I mean, they were playing soccer with kids in Ghana with, I don't even think it was a fully blown up ball, on a dirt field. And the kids were laughing and they were having fun. And my children got to see how they were so much more similar to other kids. And I also learned the kind of dirty little secret about volunteering, which is that the real reason we do it is because it feels so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the truth? And then it becomes really addictive. We do more of it, and that's a cool thing for the planet.
For sure.
Share with us, well, let's actually move into our Think Like a Journalist quote, because I think it's relevant to where we are today. And it says, to be successful, you have to have your heart in your business and your business in your heart. Thomas J. Watson, what are your thoughts?
I just love that, because I think that we don't put enough heart into our business. And that's one of the biggest success strategies that I've seen, is when you can come from a place of service and opening your heart and seeing what your true value is in what you put out, is when your business will totally thrive. So I think it's beautiful.
Share a success quote or a tip that's meaningful to you, and in particular, impactful for this episode.
So this is a quote from Leonardo da Vinci, and it's, learn how to see. Realize that everything connects to everything else. And I love this in the money conversation, because too often you take the view of money of, oh, that's my money over here. It's kind of a separate thing. And where it really works well is when you see how money is just a way of doing what you most want in the world and making a difference for yourself and your family and your community. And the money conversation, the giving and receiving, really all connects to everything else.
We've heard a little bit of your background, and I, like I said, I love the left and right side bringing it together, especially in this building of abundance and managing your wealth. But take us back in time, how you became this way, and then to a moment in time that is your career highlight, your proudest moment.
When I started, I was kind of a reluctant accountant in my early my career. I'm someone who's really good at numbers, but really loves the connection that people have. And so as all through my career, as I was trying to support people in having a better relationship with their money and having my clients have reach their goals more quickly, I realized that combining our inner strengths of being able to visualize and picture things along with the specific tactics was really successful. I also found that some of the greatest joy that I have in doing my work is when I get to speak in front of audiences. And so, in the United States, my typical audience might be either a women's initiative or financial advisors helping them grow their practice, really professional people. And I had an experience on one of our volunteer trips. I was going to Ghana for the second time, and I realized that a lot of the work I did there was a great experience, but wasn't using my unique abilities. And through a series of events and having the intention that this particular trip I was going to use my unique abilities, I was invited to speak at the local high school there. Now, in the United States, I can't think of a more terrifying audience for me than teenagers, right? I'd be so concerned that they'd be staring at their phone and that it would be a really difficult audience for me, but I couldn't say no. And the kind of big, broad topic was investing in themselves. I'm like, okay, I can do that. And I initially thought it would be 30 kids in a room. It ended up being 1,000 kids in a room with no PA system. So I jokingly say I screamed at 1,000 kids for an hour, but we actually had a really great experience. And the next year I went back to the same high school and spoke to 2,000 kids. And even though that didn't directly relate to my career, I think it was such a highlight for me, because I saw how this message of what we think and what we say to ourselves has a huge impact on what shows up in our lives is translatable to people all over the world. So these are kids, so different age group than I'm used to talking to, a totally different kind of environment there. Most of these kids came from very poor homes. And yet, this is a universal concept. So it's really, when I think back, absolutely one of my favorite peak professional experiences.
What a great story. And what was the reaction to it? How did the kids respond afterwards?
They not only the kids, but the administrators there, they loved it. It really energized things. A big part of my message is for them to know that they're great. I wouldn't use the word awesome there because that's not a word that's initially used by them, but how their energy that they put out comes back to them. They totally got it. And this idea of picturing their success, you know, these are kids that have a lot more challenges than the kids in the United States here. First of all, to even get to high school, it costs $500 to go to high school there. It's not free. And in the kids in the community that we worked in, we started a scholarship fund because the average income is $50 a month. So these brilliant, bright kids can't even get to high school. So for them to know that even getting that far was a huge accomplishment, everyone was energized. The other volunteers that were there, the kids, and it was so incredibly rewarding.
Wow, that's so great that you're doing that. Do you continue to do that now?
I'm actually going back in January and going back and to this community. And then I'm also doing new volunteer work there where I'm going to be working with women business owners. And I'm super excited about that. I was actually talking about that this morning and going to be helping them with cash flow planning. So these small business owners that really don't have a sense of how cash flow works. So we're going to get really tactical with them. And I'm also intending on sharing some of these bigger picture ideas with them as well.
Fantastic. Well, it's hard to go from that to this, but this is where we learn, and that's in the when it didn't work moment. So share with us a story about a struggle, what it felt like, what you were going through, and how you found correction as direction.
So it was January of 1999, and I was sitting in my office. I had shut the door so my staff wouldn't hear me, and I was on the phone with my business coach, and I was telling her how freaked out I was. So at that point in my business, I had changed my business structure, and my income dropped significantly from doing it. I knew it was the right thing to do, but I cut my income about three quarters by making this change. And I said to Phyllis, you know, Phyllis, this is my income's down. We have two little kids at home. And at that time, my husband also made a decision to leave his current business. So it was really all up to me. And I was freaking out. Now, I am not a crier, and I was on the phone sobbing to Phyllis. And I'm pouring all this out to her. And she says, in the most loving way, basically like a slap across the face virtually, because I was on the phone with her, she said, Ellen, I've known you a really long time, and I know you know that what you think about what's going on makes a huge impact, and it really sounds like you're coming from a place of scarcity instead of abundance. And I'm like, oh, you know when someone tells you something you know is true?
Yes.
And in that moment, I made a decision. I'm like, you know what? You are so right. And I decided at that very moment that I was willing to do whatever it took to grow my practice. And this was like leading into a recession. It was right before things started to go down. I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. Before that point, I was focusing on all the things I wasn't willing to do. Like other financial advisors would work evenings and Saturdays, and they would give big public seminars. And I had a lot of attention prior to this, and I wasn't going to do that. I had little kids. I didn't want to do that. And I decided, you know what, I'm willing to do whatever it takes, of course, ethically. And the interesting thing was that shifting to starting to picture exactly what I wanted to happen and being willing to do whatever it took, I didn't have to do any of those things that I didn't want to do. But by the end of the year, my business revenue was back up where it was the prior year. And I actually grew all through that recession that happened in 2001, 2002. And I credit it to that moment in time when I realized I had to shift my mindset and I had to be willing to do what it took.
Wow. What a transformation, right? All from a virtual slap.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing how just shifting that mindset when it comes to your health or when it comes to your finances, and well, anything, relationships, just putting on a different set of lenses, as I like to say, gives you a different perspective. So critical to have that clarity.
And I would also add, you know, I was in a place with a lot of shame around my money at that point. And I think a lot of people face this. So we were running up credit card debt. Now, I'm a financial advisor. I have like all these letters after my name. And I was mortified that I was in that situation. I'm like, how can I do this if that's the situation I'm in? And I articulating it to someone else because I was really, I'm so embarrassed about it. And then again, making a decision that it didn't always have to be that way, I think was another important part. People are, you know, a lot of times people are just embarrassed and ashamed about the financial situation they're in. And you keep that from getting yourself out of the hole that you've dug yourself into.
That's such a great point because I, you know, you're right here. You're doing this for a living and you're thinking, wow, I'm maybe not living exactly what I'm trying to tell others to do. And so it creates that, you know, that resistance within yourself. So you have to acknowledge it to be able to turn it around.
Right.
Let's dive into these top tips because I think it's just the perfect time coming off of that story. And thank you for sharing that. That was very powerful. But let's talk now about make success and prosperity a habit. So I know you have 5 tips. So I want you to take us through that and then we'll talk a little bit about it.
Yeah. So the first part here is really about minding your money. You know, what is it that you believe about money and knowing how important this is? So brain research has shown that we can program our brain to start to see success. And athletes have known this for years. They, I think about when I see athletes before a big competition, like in the Olympics or a big sporting event, they're visualizing their success. And it can work like this for any goal that you have. So early in my career, I would picture the phone ringing in my office and the perfect client being on the other end of the line and them coming in and working together all the way through to a really long-term relationship. And this is a tool that's so simple, it doesn't take a long period of time, but I think people discount it. It's one of the most powerful things you can do is to, you know, truly picture your success that way. So that's one of the first things. And what I'm actually going to do, Phoebe, is talk about the top 3, because I feel like if people do this, their business and their personal success is going to skyrocket.
Sure.
So the second thing, and this goes for whether you're in business or your personal finances, is really to rock your savings. So this is, we went right brain with picturing your success and picturing your prosperity. The second part is to rock your savings. I know this sounds so obvious, but what I found is the people that I work with that are on track for their goals and hitting all their objectives and being able to retire or change their careers whenever they want are ones that significantly spend less than they earn. Now, I know that's like super obvious,
right?
But most people don't do it. People spend more than they earn, or they're like, well, when my business gets better, I'll be saving more. But having that lifestyle that's less than your current income is one of the best things you can do. And setting that up on autopilot. I don't know anyone who has set up an automatic savings plan where there's money coming out of your paycheck into a retirement plan or out of your checking account into another account for savings. I don't know anyone who's been doing that on a regular basis and looks back and then says they're sorry they did that.
Right.
I mean, no one has ever said to me, what a bummer, I saved so much money in my 401k plan. It's just human nature. The studies have found that the more we can set things up on autopilot, the easier it is for us. So really simple, but incredibly important to set that up on a regular basis. I don't like to talk about budgets because they really don't work for anyone and they feel restrictive. I like to say it's like eating celery at a pizza party. No one wants to do that. But it doesn't mean you don't know where your money's going, whether this is in your business cash flow or your personal cash flow. So it's about creating a spending plan, knowing what's coming in and what's flowing out on a regular basis. So you can decide if you're spending money on things that are truly important to you. because I think it's so easy to be unconscious with our spending, right? So if you know where your money's going and set it on things you value, it's so much easier to get to where you want to go and allocate your money onto things that are important to you.
Absolutely.
And the last part is to increase the velocity of your generosity. So this is giving what you want to get. So I'll start with financial giving. The question can be, can giving actually make you rich? And I've seen over and over that it actually does. So I'm not just talking about volunteerism here. I'm talking about actually giving of your financial resources. Studies on philanthropy have shown that people that are more generous actually make more money. Now, you might think, well, they're giving more because they make more, and that happens too. But one study showed if you had two people with the exact same income, same area of the country, same education level, the only difference economically is that one family gave $100 more that year than the other family. They found that the family that gave more money made $350 more that year. And if we think about countries like the United States that are more generous, we have higher GDPs, gross domestic products. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to that Leonardo da Vinci quote, I realize that everything connects to everything else. You know, when I think back at during the recession, and people were hanging on so tightly to what they had. You can't see me because you just have my voice now, but I'm making a clenched fist.
Right.
You're hanging on so tightly to what you have. Like, I'm not going to be okay. I'm not going to be okay. I'm not going to be okay. There's no way you can receive. Mm-hmm. And just at the time when people needed our money more than ever, charities, family members, and you're hanging on so tightly because you're afraid you don't have enough, you can't receive. Now, on the other hand, if your hands are always open and you're giving, 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 and not being willing to receive, that doesn't work either. Mm-hmm. So the suggestion here is that you, just like setting up your savings on automatic pilot, that you set up your giving on automatic pilot. So what do I mean by that? That's taking a portion of your income. I love a percentage because then as your income goes up, you proportionately give more money. Taking a portion of your income and putting it into a separate account to be earmarked for giving, wherever you want to give it to. Whether that's a charity and you get a tax deduction for it, if it's a qualified charity, or a family member or friend in need. We've been doing this for years, and that's really how we've accumulated money to do these volunteer vacations. They're all tax deductible, and as well as giving money to charities that are important to our family. And I've also found that when someone asks me to contribute to their charity, whether they're walking in a breast cancer walk or someone passes away and you're donating to a charity that was important to that person, I found that having this separate account has made me so much more generous, and it feels great. I love giving my friends a standing ovation for their good work by writing a nice, healthy check to whatever charity is important to them.
Oh, absolutely. It takes us right back to the beginning when we just said, you know, volunteering feels so good. And that's what keeps it going, is it becomes this addictive thing that, you know, you're helping someone else. And I also love this last point, and I do want you to talk about it. Create self-calming strategies to shrink financial angst. How do you do that?
Well, so it's so important that you first of all do this and know how important it is, because studies have found that when people are freaked out, they're in a terrible financial situation and they're incredibly nervous and stressed about it, their IQ actually drops. So it's almost impossible to make good financial decisions from a place of fear. So, it's important to have these self-calming strategies. It doesn't seem like a typical financial advisor recommendation to meditate, but it's one of the best things I've ever done for my business success and my personal success. So I've been a regular meditator for 12 years now, every morning, at least 20 minutes a day when I'm being really good, twice a day for 20 minutes. And what it does is it helps calm down all that chatter, that like, oh my God, how am I going to get myself out of this situation? It's so scary, blah, blah, blah. It just calms it down to be able to think clearly. Now, you might be thinking, well, I don't have 20 minutes a day to sit in meditation. It can be just a really deep belly breath. So breathing in where you feel your belly expanding and exhaling and feeling it contracting, your breath helps oxygenate your brain. It calms you down. I mean, one of the strategies I've been playing with the last few weeks is conscious emailing. I learned about this through things they're doing at Google. And so basically that is, before I send an email, before I hit send, I close my eyes, I take three deep breaths, and then I really look at the email and think, how is the person receiving this going to feel? So it gives me a little mini meditation. It has me being so aware that I'm not sending the email to the wrong person. I'm not being too curt. I'm really being thoughtful about this. I'm focusing on the other person's feelings. And it does so many great things, right? A little mini meditation. And the more often you can do that, the more clear you can think you'll be, and you'll be able to see opportunities that are out there for you.
Absolutely. One thing that I do just about every day is I practice yoga. So, and I do a flow, Ashtanga style hot yoga, actually. But it is a point in time for me to really let my thoughts go, to concentrate on the breath, and utilize my body at the same time to create something really meaningful and impactful that takes me out of any of the stresses I might have had. It's just literally a reset for me. And you know, it's something I couldn't live without. It's that critical to my day.
And to find the contemplative practice that works for you is so important. For someone else, it might be walking through nature or running without a headset and just getting those endorphins up, whatever it is. But the fact that you have such a beautiful daily practice starts your day in such a great way. And I'm sure that other people feel more calm just being in your presence.
Well, let's hope so. That is indeed important. That's what we're aiming for. And, you know, coming from TV news, I had such a high stress career, and now in branding and marketing and video development, all of that, there's ample amounts of stress day to day. But I think you're absolutely right. It's finding that space, carving it out, and making a commitment to that. So brand journalism community, remember we started the topic of this show as make success and prosperity a habit. So it's the things that you do habitually that are going to lead to the success. And that's so, so important. It's really hard to do when you're feeling that pinch, you know, or that significant struggle. But in fact, that's when you need it most. So great, great tips. It'll all be in the show notes at thinklikeajournalist.com. You'll find it under Ellen's show notes page. It's time now to think like a journalist. So speaking of needing some, you know, mindful breaths and and belly breaths, this will come in handy for this. You've been hired to help an ailing company. It's about to financially collapse. Its reputation shot. Ellen, you have a month, $1,000 budget, a smartphone, and a laptop. How do you begin to turn this company around?
I would invest from within. So that means, just as we were talking about, starting with the internal work of the people in the team there. So how do you get all on the same page? What is the vision for success? And picture that. Seriously, starting a meditation practice. It seems backwards, like, no, we've got to hurry and get this done. What I know is when you slow down, you're able to hurry up and go faster, because you can't get yourself out of a deep hole when you're just looking down, and you need to be able to see all the opportunities out there. So that's part of it. And then I would use giving as your growth strategy. So how can you make a significant difference in your customers or your clients' life, whoever they're selling to, how can you add value for them? How can you be out there making a difference? It's one of the best growth strategies that I've had for my business is whatever I want, I give more of, and not with an expectation of something in return. So for example, if I want more referrals, I give more referrals, but not saying, well, I'm going to give you a referral so you give one back to me. It's so that I know when I'm out there giving, things flow back from unexpected sources. So far, I haven't spent any of the $1,000.
Love
or used
it.
A smartphone or a laptop. So those are strategies that seem like you're not actually doing something, but you truly are. Because then I know that you have the answers within you. And it's a matter of getting quiet enough to see what they are.
So true. And in this really disruptive world, we often don't have any time to get quiet. So it's something really to think about and ponder and look at your day and say, how often am I getting quiet? It's making me think. And as you were talking, I was getting in some of those breaths, just, you know, listening to what you're saying, but it becomes so much more mindful in our conversation. What is one piece of technology, video, multimedia equipment, or app that you just can't live without?
Well, one I use every single day and sometimes twice a day is Insight Timer. It's my meditation timer app. And I just love it. They have guided meditations on it. There's a timer. I can have different gongs. I can have it start at different times. There's a community of other meditators on there. So you can thank someone for meditating with you. I could see how many other people in the world are meditating at the same time I am. And so highly recommend. 5 stars. Insight Timer.
How cool is that? And are you using a phrase, a mantra, or how? Tell us just briefly about your meditation practice.
Yeah, so I've been trained in transcendental meditation, which uses a mantra. Mm-hmm. I've also been playing with mindfulness meditation as I'm going through my day, which is really so beautiful because I might sit in meditation and be all present, and then I can get running around and not notice what's going on. So it's like I think about getting in the shower and can't remember if I wash my hair or not. So it's paying attention, and even just like you said, paying attention to your breath, this mindful emailing. So, but my longstanding meditation practice is one of transcendental meditation. You know, it's cool. Now there are so many really great apps that are free out there, like Calm.com, Calm, or Headspace, where you can have someone walk you through a guided meditation, which is a beautiful way to start. And then there's background music. So I think it's much easier now to get into a meditation practice than it was when I started.
Name one book, documentary, blog, podcast, or internet channel that you'd like to recommend.
The book that I would recommend, and I'm reading it right now, is a book called Search Inside Yourself. And it is written by people at Google. They have a program that Search Inside Yourself, get it, search Google, right?
And it's so perfect.
Written, the guy who wrote it, well, he'd worked with Jon Kabat-Zinn and someone else famous, I can't think of their name right now, who brought mindfulness and a mindfulness practice and emotional intelligence practice into Google. It's written kind of for engineers, so it's very practical in the way that they talk about things. The guy that wrote it, his title at Google is Jolly Good Fellow. And on his card, it says, which no one can deny. Like, how fabulous is that? So what I'm loving about this is it's a really practical way of starting to look at this idea of being more mindful, being more emotionally intelligent, and how it can improve your professional success.
I love that we're seeing so much more of this kind of personality come through in business cards, that it's not so stiff. You know, Jolly Good Fellow is the title. That's so cute.
Isn't that fabulous? I know. I love it.
Expert predictions, the year is 2025. So give us a look and some, you know, parting financial advice for small business owners, entrepreneurs, freelancers. What do we need to pay attention to? But first, what's it going to look like in 2025?
So I'm going to give you my aspirational view versus my predictive view. I aspire to have it look like we're in a total sharing economy. Not that we don't have capitalism and we're not building our own wealth, but this idea that it's a regular idea that people use giving as a strategy to grow, that people stop being afraid of managing their money and being so freaked out about it and see it as a tool for positive change. You know, see their money as a force for good in the world. I mean, my aspirational view is that people get past, am I going to be okay, to how much can I give? there's a huge transfer of wealth that's going to happen in the next 25 years. And I've seen ranges from $25 trillion to $49 trillion. And just $25 trillion, to put that into perspective, that would be like taking that many dollar bills and laying them end to end. You could get from the earth to the sun and back 12 times. 12 times. That's how big that number is.
Yeah.
And if just 10% of that were used for positive change, every person on the planet could be fed, every child educated, money for solar energy and breast cancer and Alzheimer's research could increase 1,000-fold. So that's really my aspirational view, and it gives us enough time for that to happen that people stop being so freaked out about money and see it as the incredible tool that it is for them to grow for themselves, for their family, and for their community. They're all important.
And last parting advice, something that is critical to do now to prepare for 9 years out.
The three things: setting up an automatic savings plan. I don't care if it's $25 a month or $25,000 a month, to set up things on autopilot, to set up an automatic giving plan and make that part of your strategy to help you loosen your grip on money. And use that amazing tool that you have, which is your brain and your mind, to visualize and picture exactly what you want to have happen, and know that that is a tool that you have that is so incredibly powerful.
So good. What a way to end it. So make sure that you are, you know, taking that quiet time, brand journalism community, to see what you really want to create. That's really where it all begins. It begins in the thoughts and it begins in the mind to create that great success. Ellen, thanks for bringing that all to light and sharing it and unpacking it in this important episode.